welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, November 8, 2023. The British charity Oxfam says the situation of refugees and returnees in South Sudan is very dire.
They need water. They need medical attention in case there are, you know, medical issues that have come up. Those are the things that they need. Children, they need nutrition.
And about 9,000 Sudanese living at Goram refugee camp outside South Sudan's capital, Juba, say they need support. We'll have this report and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The British charity Oxfam is expressing concern over the humanitarian situation of refugees and returnees at the Rang transit camp in South Sudan's Upper Nile state. Oxfam's acting deputy country director in South Sudan says 7 months after conflict erupted in Sudan, 3,000 refugees and returnees arrive at the reception center daily. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Vimbai Mazani, Oxfam acting deputy country director in South Sudan, says the humanitarian situations of the refugees and returnees at the Rang transit camp is there. She says the assistance provided to the refugees and returnees is not enough due to the influx of families fleeing the conflict in Sudan. Mazani says families arriving in Rang are in dire need of humanitarian assistance.
They need water, they need medical attention in case there are, you know, medical issues that have come up. Those are the things that they need. Children, they need nutrition. And despite all other that, we have issues of protection. Moving 61 kilometers, there are a lot of things that are happening to women and girls when they are moving on those roads. So all those, they need to be attended to when they are arriving.
Oxfam and other aid agencies on the ground registered a huge influx of people fleeing conflict in Sudan. Mazani says Rang has very few facilities for accommodating more than 20,000 people.
In and outside the camp, we have around 20,100 individuals, inclusive of both returnees and refugees, that have been registered and are in and outside the transit camp. And the transit camp was not meant to harbor such a huge amount of individuals. It was made in a design that is supposed to harbor less than 5,000, less than 2,000.
Oxfam says the huge number of people arriving at the Rang transit camp has forced aid agencies to change their strategies.
So it's more of organization partners trying to prioritize within the highest priorities that you have. You have facilities, but they are not meant for 20,000. So how do you deal with 20,000 people in a facility that is supposed to cater for 5,000? So those are the challenges that partners are having.
The county commissioner of Rang, Kirk Padiek, confirms the number of people fleeing from Sudan to Rang County of Upper Nile State is changing every day.
The number of IDPs is increasing, but the Arabs come and go back to Jebelin and Jeddah. They only come to register themselves and go to Jeddah. I'm going to their site tomorrow and I'll give you details.
The UN Refugees Agency, or UNHCR, says there are an increase in the number of Sudanese refugees arriving in South Sudan since the beginning of October. Marine Helene Varney, the UNHCR country representative for South Sudan, told VOA that since the start of the conflict in mid-April, more than 360,000 people have entered South Sudan, a vast majority of whom are South Sudanese returnees. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Still on Sudanese refugees, the French medical charity Doctors Without Borders say a resurgence of fighting and violence against civilians in El Jineina in Sudan's West Darfur region has forced thousands of people to flee their homes. I visited Goram refugee camp in South Sudan last week and spoke to a lot of refugees who made the journey from Darfur into South Sudan. We'll bring more voices from those refugees in our shows from tomorrow going forward. Mediators at the Sudan talks in Jeddah say the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces have committed to easing humanitarian aid deliveries and implementing confidence-building measures. The news was announced on the Saudi state news agency, SPA, but does not say that the deal includes a ceasefire and so is not expected to lessen the fighting. Reuters says the mediators expressed regret that the two parties had not yet reached an agreement on a pause in the fighting. Instead, they agreed to work with the United Nations Humanitarian Agency, OCHA, to resolve impediments to humanitarian aid access. They also agreed to set up a line of communication between the army and the RSF and tone down inflammatory rhetoric. They also said they would apprehend prison escapees. Soon after the war began, members of the ex-president Omar al-Bashir's Islamist regime said they were part of a wider breakout of prisoners. Reuters reports that the Sudan Army paramilitary rapid support forces agreed to ease aid, take trust-building measure steps. That's according to Saudi press agency. South Sudan's Minister of General Ministry of General Education and Instruction says 2.8 million children are out of school this year. Martin Tako Moi, the acting Minister of Education and Instruction, says several factors prevented children from enrolling and staying in school in some parts of the country. For VOA News, Charlton Doki reports from Juba.
Speaking at a workshop in Juba Tuesday to validate and launch the General Education Sector Plan for the next 5 years, Martin Tako Moi expressed concern about the number of children attending school in South Sudan.
The number of out-of-school children keeps increasing instead of decreasing. From 2018, it used to be 2.2, but now it has increased to 2.8.
He says the government is concerned about the increasing number of out-of-school children across the country. Moi attributes the drop in the number of children in school to several factors, including flooding in parts of the country. He says schools in Unity and Jonglei states, the Greater Pibor administrative area and parts of Western Equatoria state are affected by flooding.
Almost the two states submerged by the flood water. And with the recent rains, I don't know what will be the situation. Thousands, if not millions, of children in those states and regions will not access education. It's really a very serious issue.
Samuel Ngor Maluk is the headmaster of Bethel Primary School in the Jonglei State Capital Bor. Maluk says many children have dropped out of school in recent years due to flooding and conflict.
Yeah, since the flood began, the families of the pupils or students has not always been in a stabilized condition. So as per my school, according to what I have observed, the dropout pupils in Bethel is 236. And the main factor I observe is the issue of flooding. So there are some communities or families that are still evacuating their homes later to the dropout of the pupils.
Maluk urges parents and caregivers to encourage children to go to school despite the economic and climate-related challenges.
Even though parents are evacuating their houses or their families, they should focus on the future of their children, not to abandon them, not to study their courses, because tomorrow the time you spend without any activity, you will regret. So I urge the parent just to go forward with the life of their children. Though there are some challenges like these natural disasters, they should not abandon their children.
A joint statement issued by the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, and the UN Cultural and Education Agency, UNESCO, during the commemoration of the International Day of Education early this year, indicates that more than half of the school-age population, More than 2.8 million children are out of school. It adds that 53% of the out-of-school children are girls. The statement identifies poverty, conflict, insecurity, and natural disasters such as floods as the main barriers for access to education for many children in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the UN says Africa is experiencing shortage of teachers. Stay tuned for how that is affecting education across the continent. That story is coming to you right after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what would you most likely to accomplish in life, and how close are you to achieving it?
My dream is to be one of the best filmmakers in Uganda and maybe in the world at large. With time and what I've done so far to achieve that, yes, I know I'm still very far, but I've written some scripts already.
To me, as a software developer, I still have a long way. But hopefully, God, I'll be able to make it.
I want to be a voice for the people who I need and help people generally wherever I find myself. And I think that studying to become a lawyer is in the right direction to achieving that.
I would like to be a very, very great musician, a composer. For now, I'm not close there, but I'm working to get to the level I can actually achieve that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. UNESCO says Africa continues to experience a shortage of teachers in many schools due to an increased number of students seeking education and the lack of enough resources to improve the education sector. The UN agency says the continent needs at least 15 million teachers to teach primary and secondary students by 2030 to address the shortage of teachers. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Africa has successfully enrolled more students in class in the past decade, but the quality of education has been questioned due to teacher shortages in many African schools. The United Nations Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, says despite some gains in the past 5 years in teacher recruitment, progress has been slow, and many countries need to increase the number of teachers they recruit yearly. Patrick Nkengne is a senior education analyst at UNESCO. He says a small number of teachers are attending to millions of students in Africa.
When a classroom welcomes more than 100 students instead of the about 50 students it was built for, or as opposed to a ratio of 40 to 50 students per teacher recommended by the norm and standards, it clearly shows a shortage. As the number of classrooms in these conditions increases, the issues of shortages becomes acute.
For Africa to reach its education goals, UNESCO says the continent has to recruit at least 15 million teachers by 2030, both in primary and secondary schools. The agency said the Central African Republic, Chad, Mali and Niger will need the highest number of primary teachers with 6% or more growth annually. In secondary education, higher annual growth in teacher numbers is needed in many African countries. Emmanuel Manyasa is an education expert based in Kenya. He says many schools are producing uneducated children due to the lack of teachers.
So you have both dissatisfied teachers and dissatisfied learners. The learners aren't getting the attention and the support they need. The teachers are overwhelmed by the big numbers and the long hours of teaching, which don't even give them time to prepare for lessons, so they come to class unprepared. disenfranchising learners even more. And eventually, our schools just become growth centers where children go to grow, with very little learning happening there.
Some experts blame financial constraints and the few resources available are not utilized, leading to a waste of resources. In countries with enough teachers, Nkengne says, they struggle to provide quality education to the learners due to poor teacher qualifications.
In a normal situation, a teacher must be adequately equipped to care of the students so that they effectively acquire knowledge at school. Unfortunately, it was demonstrated that in many cases, a considerable number of those who are supposed to play the role of teachers does not even have the mastery of the subject they are supposed to teach. In those cases, students cannot learn because basically they don't have a teacher in front of them. Those cases are not easy to identify. To do so, system needs to make teacher pass a test.
Experts say there are not enough resources to conduct tests to check the educational knowledge of teachers. Manyasa says teachers need to be encouraged to work hard to reach areas to bridge the gap of those not getting an education.
We need to be able to make sure there is fair distribution of the teachers across the country. And with that goes the issue of how do we incentivize teachers to work in areas that are generally not preferred. Mostly they are not preferred because of harsh climatic conditions, sometimes because of perennial insecurity problems, sometimes because of the fact that they are rural. So how do we incentivize teachers to work in those areas so that we can improve the distribution of the teachers across the country? I think that is critical.
UNESCO is urging African governments to assess the anticipated teacher requirements for the next 3 to 10 years, reflect on an initial training approach that can produce the necessary number of teachers, and ensure adequate resources for the recruitment and training of additional educators. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News.
Still on issues on the African continent, African leaders are pushing for renewal of a preferential U.S. trade policy that allows them duty-free access to the U.S. market that is set to expire in 2025. Kate Bartlett spoke to U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai about U.S.-China competition at the annual summit of the African Growth and Opportunity Act in Johannesburg and visited a factory that does businesses with both U.S. and China.
These South African macadamias and dried fruits may be small individually, but they have a big impact for many of the people working at this factory called Empire State Trading, including Maxwell Sukazi.
Yeah, now I'm working there 15 years, and then it's my first job I get it from Empire. I'm coming from a place that they're on a rural area. There's a shortage of the job left side.
Sukazi supports a family of 7 on his income. He's packing product that will go to markets around the world, including to the United States under the African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. Launched in 2000, AGOA is a U.S. duty-free policy for eligible countries that has been credited with job creation on the continent. But the amount of product exported to the U.S. when compared to the other main markets of Europe and China fluctuates based on market demand. Peter van der Vesthuizen is one of the owners of the family-owned business.
The year before, the U.S. Probably took 50 or 60% of our crop. Where this year it changed, where the U.S. probably only took 10 or 15% of our crop, where the Chinese have taken, call it 70% of our crop.
Van der Vesthuizen says there are differences in doing business with each country.
It's completely different cultures to start off. Payment terms, everything is very different. The Chinese is, very strong, importance around relationships, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I think in the U.S., it's more business-like. What can you offer? What can you pay? There's relationships obviously involved as well, but it's more black and white.
There are also other differences between China and the U.S. China is sub-Saharan Africa's largest trade partner, and the U.S. ranks 3rd based on 2021 World Bank numbers. At the annual AGOA summit, hosted by South Africa this year, U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai told VOA Washington is prioritizing the continent.
Yes, China's footprint in the global economy in terms of trade is enormous, We know that. That is true in many of our conversations around the world. We feel very strongly that the type of partnership the United States brings and can bring is inherently different from what other partners bring. And that is why we are focused on enhancing and building on a U.S. partnership with Africa.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has called on the U.S. Congress to renew AGOA before it expires so there can be more investments and more jobs. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg, South Africa.
And from Johannesburg in South Africa, we move to the Middle East, where Israeli tanks surrounded Gaza City. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says Israel will assume overall security responsibility after it ends control of the territory by the Hamas militants. After another round of shuttle diplomacy, Secretary of State Antony Blinken has acknowledged that efforts to secure a pause in Israel's bombing of Gaza and to plan for the future of the Palestinians are, quote, a work in progress. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
1 month after the brutal attacks by the U.S.-designated terrorist organization Hamas that Israel says killed 1,400 people and injured 5,400, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made headlines during an interview with ABC News.
Those who don't want to continue the way of Hamas, it certainly is not. I think Israel will, for an indefinite period, will have the overall security responsibility, because we've seen what happens when we don't have it. When we don't have that security responsibility, what we have is the eruption of Hamas terror on a scale that we couldn't imagine.
At the White House, National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby was asked about Netanyahu's comments.
We'll let them speak to their intentions, but we are definitely having conversations about what the post-conflict environment ought to look like and what governance in Gaza ought to look like. One thing there's absolutely no daylight on is Hamas can't be part of that equation. You can't go back to October 6th.
At the State Department Tuesday, spokesperson Vedant Patel was also asked about the future of Gaza after the current fighting ends.
Gaza is Palestinian land, and it will remain Palestinian land. And generally speaking, we do not support reoccupation of Gaza, and neither does Israel. Secretary Blinken was fairly clear about that during his travels as well.
The Secretary of State just completed another tour of the Middle East. He met with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas and indicated that the Palestinian Authority might be best suited to administer Gaza after the war. One expert who spoke to VOA said he believes a two-state solution for Israelis and Palestinians is still the best hope for a lasting peace in the region. Gilead Shear was chief of staff to former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak. He spoke to VOA via Zoom from Israel.
And I believe that this goes through a rehabilitation of Gaza with a gradual integration of the Palestinian Authority with the help of the Saudis, perhaps, the Gulf states, Egypt, Jordan, the United States, the Sunni axis, the Sunni Western axis could help that come a reality.
Blinken left the Middle East and headed to Asia for a G7 meeting. But the Israel-Hamas war was still very much a top issue of discussion.
Very much appreciate the words of support and sympathy in the wake of the horrific attack by Hamas that did result, as you know, in American victims as well as American hostages. This is a very important moment as well for G7 to come together in the face of this crisis and to speak as we do with one clear voice.
Protests of U.S. military support for Israel followed Blinken to Japan as international outrage grows over the mounting civilian death toll in Gaza. At least 10,328 people in Gaza have been killed and 25,900 have been wounded, the Hamas-run Gaza Health Ministry said Tuesday. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code plus one, then 202-258-3076.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what image do you think your country has internationally?
My country international has a very good image based on its level of security, the gender involvement of women in decision making, and its cleanliness.
Internationally, my country, we are seen as a hospitable country and very friendly and, you know, a strong country to us all.
It is good because, okay, in other areas like the tourism side of it, the security side of it, let me say like the locally, like these days we don't have like political instabilities in the country.
My country, at the moment, I think it has one of the poorest image because look at the taxes my country is imposing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
That's all we prepared for you on this Wednesday, October 8th, rather November 8th, 2023. I mean, I just came back from Juba and I'm very, very, very touched. I was very touched by testimonies from people who listen to this program, some who love the program because of music, and others who are asking for the program to be expanded across South Sudan. Well, some of these demands are above my pay grade, but I would like to thank Carol Van Damme for taking care of the audience while I was away. We now leave you with the song Mama Sarah by the Freedom Boys.
Beat your brothers, Nasky and Freedom Boys. Nam, Nina, WJ,
I've been listening to the Freedom Boys and the song Mama Sarah. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Bill Andre, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again for another edition of South Sudan in Focus tomorrow.